The word outsourcing has become common. Moving a business to another location, usually one with cheaper labor costs like India or China. But the term crowdsourcing is new. That's opening up jobs or innovation to everyone, to the crowd. The term's only about a year and a half old. It's come to mean using the internet to put out a call for research ideas or products, using monetary awards or prizes as incentive. NPR's Margo Adler has this report.
If you want to get a notion of crowdsourcing, think of NASA giving a $200,000 prize to an inventor, Peter Homer, who designed a new space glove in his dining room. His goals, he said.
One was to beat the NASA glove. My second goal was to impress the NASA guy.
Getting $200,000 was icing on the cake. Or think of something like Wikipedia, where people create a product together, in this case, an encyclopedia. Clay Shirky, a professor at the Interactive Telecommunications Program at NYU, says it used to take a big corporation with thousands of people to do a huge project, but the internet has so lowered the cost of information that that's no longer true.
Groups of individuals can now do it. So, for example, the open source, the Wikipedia, all of those are cases where previously you had to have central management and now you don't.
Most crowdsourcing involves an open call over the internet. Take the company Innocentive. Innocentive pairs seekers, groups and companies that need solutions, with solvers, researchers who want to provide answers. If I register as a solver, I can go on the website and see lists of requests for solutions.
Novel quantitative analytical method to quantify sugars is needed, clearly out of my line. Rigid, stretchable, and eco-friendly material is desired. Read more.
One day, David Braden, a chemist and patent attorney living in Durham, North Carolina, was just scrolling through the Innocentive website, and he saw a chemistry problem that he thought he could answer.
So I filled out the paperwork, and I gave them a rough sketch of what I thought was the solution. And then about a month later, they wrote back and said, you know, your answer has a lot of promise. Could you send us some catalysts and conditions that might work? And they found that mine was the best solution to making this particular product.
Braden tinkered with the idea a little more and then resubmitted it and won $4,000 for his solution. At the time, Braden had no clue who he was working for. Although some companies are very public about their work, others are working on proprietary material that they don't want to reveal before it is marketed. So Braden only found out who he was working for by chance when an article appeared in the Boston Globe that mentioned a project by Procter & Gamble.
And they were describing the solvers that they had found. They said, oh, we've got somebody in Russia, they've got somebody in China, and there's this patent attorney in Durham. I suspect that's me.
Founded in 2001 as a part of Eli Lilly, Innocentive spun off on its own a little more than a year ago. There are more than 120,000 researchers who have registered on Innocentive's website, and they come from 175 different countries. Innocentive helps companies form questions for researchers to solve. Anyone who registers as a solver can take a shot. Prizes for the best solutions can range from a couple $1,000s to hundreds of thousands, even $1 million. The company has posted around 500 challenges. A third have been answered successfully. Since David Braden didn't know who he was working for, I asked the president and CEO of Innocentive, Dwayne Spradlin, how could Braden know he wasn't doing the project for Al-Qaeda or a company he might have qualms about? Spradlin says the customer list is screened carefully and the company complies with the State Department's rules and regulations. The solvers who submit the answers are also anonymous. That fact sold Maria Blair of the Rockefeller Foundation on Innocentive. It meant there was no bias toward expertise. Innovation was open to all.
What the company or the organization who's asking the question gets is all of the answers. But they don't get the resume of the person who submitted it. They don't get their name. They don't get their location. They don't get how many years they've been working in the field or what their particular experience is. All they get is the answer. It opens up problems to entirely new answers that the asker would have never contemplated before.
And since Blair's work focuses on creating opportunities for the poor, she believes crowdsourcing could harness the potential of people who have never participated in research. It could democratize innovation. It's not only companies. Groups of people are getting involved with this, too. Nate Boas is with Prize for Life. It began with a group of friends at the Harvard Business School who became determined to do something when one of their group got Lou Gehrig's disease, or ALS. The group came to feel that there was not enough attention being given to rare diseases like ALS, so they teamed up with some ALS researchers and Innocentive and offered prizes for research in the field.
None of us are scientists. You know, we have a banker, two ex-military guys, which I think speaks to this whole situation of using crowdsourcing, you don't discriminate against what knowledge people have.
Crowdsourcing, or open innovation, as it has also been called, has been used for all kinds of projects, big and small. People have designed everything from Lego sets to shoes to space vehicles. Take Threadless, a t-shirt company out of Chicago. Instead of having a graphic designer on staff, anyone can submit a design on the web, and anyone can rate them from 1 to 5. The company prints 6 or 7 winning designs each week. The winners get $2,000 and some prizes. The company started out 6 years ago with 2 guys and a website offering a $50 prize for a t-shirt design. Now they ship 80,000 t-shirts a month, and the company has 27 employees. At 31, Bob Nana is one of the older guys at Threadless.
I love it because it really puts 99% of the creativity in the community's hands.
Crowdsourcing has been good for Threadless, but no one yet knows how big a phenomenon crowdsourcing is going to become. Dwayne Spradlin, the president and CEO of Innocentive, says, remember, it's only in the last year that...
Crowdsourcing, the tools, the technologies, kind of the approaches to market have really begun to mature.
In other words, opening innovation to the crowd is very new, and we don't really know all the pluses and minuses yet. Clay Shirky of New York University says...
It's neither wholly good nor wholly bad. I mean, crowdsourcing obviously creates a lot of productive capacity that didn't previously exist. It also challenges a lot of existing jobs. We're going to have to manage with a workforce that's now not just global but temporal.
After all, if volunteers and amateurs do the work, trained professionals might be in trouble. As we enter this brave new online world of work, it's clear that few people are asking large questions about its implications, and fewer still have come up with good answers. Maybe it's a research project for Innocentive. Margot Adler, NPR News, New York.